Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of The Sports Sermon, the Georgetown Voice's very own sports podcast. I am joined today by veteran Sports Sermon contributor Chris Dunn.
Coming to you live from the Hot Take Factory. What's going on, everybody?
And then a couple first-timers to The Sports Sermon. We have Nick Gavio.
How's it going, guys?
And we have Tyler Puri, famous for his appearance on the Untitled Leisure Project's rap episode.
As always, it's up in the cranium.
All right, so we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today, but I think we should start off with going over this weekend's NCAA football games. A lot of great games, a lot of disappointing games for the Notre Dame fan in the room.
Yeah, it was brutal.
But I think we should dissect it through sort of kind of looking at the Heisman candidates early in the season and sort of how they did and sort of the games they played in. So I think the biggest story coming out of this weekend, college football, is Lamar Jackson, quarterback for Louisville. Louisville absolutely destroyed Florida State. Lamar Jackson is... His hype is through the roof after that game. So if anyone wants to kind of dissect this weekend in Lamar Jackson.
So he was definitely somebody that people hadn't really been paying attention to the first couple weeks, at least in terms of the Heisman talk. Vegas had his odds at 101 up until last week. Now they're 6-5. So he obviously is a scoring machine. He can score anyway, and we really saw that last week against their couple days ago against FSU, where he threw for, you know, he's almost thrown for 1,000 yards this season, and he has, I don't know his exact stats, I think 8 rushing touchdowns, which is like an absolute unreal number through 3 weeks. And I think it just goes to show that, for Lamar Jackson, he could have gone to Florida. He almost went to Florida on a National Recruitment Day. He was wearing like a Florida backpack. And so I think, you know, playing for Louisville, not a lot of people gave him a lot of credit, but this is a guy who could have played a few different places, really liked the coach over at Louisville, and, I mean, they're going to be really good this year, if the FSU win doesn't tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a kid, although he could have gone to Florida, he was a 3-star recruit coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. He said in high school his team didn't even have a playbook. So this is definitely an interesting story, and, you know, we're seeing he's so athletic. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. Like, he has the athleticism of a running back or a wide receiver. He's 6'3", but he can still throw the football. And, you know, like Chris said, coming into this week, I mean, he had destroyed Charlotte and Syracuse, two teams who, you know, aren't really known for their football. In this Florida State game, he just came out and did the exact same thing to the number two team in the country. Mm-hmm. So he's really catapulted himself right to the top of the Heisman watch list, and it's definitely going to be interesting to see if he can keep this pace up throughout the season.
It's just he does it with such flash and such it's just looks effortless. He skied right over the Syracuse defender on the way to a touchdown. College game days there on ESPN, he helps the team put up, I think it was 63 points, and just, I think it was 28 or something in the first quarter. I mean, just absolutely lit it up. And I think it's just his frame and his quickness and everything about him makes him... I don't think I've seen a college football player more entertaining to watch since Reggie Bush or maybe Vince Young. I mean, granted, we're not that old, but Lamar Jackson is probably the best college football athlete I've ever seen. That's through 3 games, though.
Let's remember,
the hype is very real right now.
There's a lot of games left. They still have to play Clemson. They still have to play Houston. So I think, obviously, we're only 2 games into the season. And Lamar Jackson is kind of the Heisman-less player whose stock has risen the most so far. But I think, you know, with such a fast rise, it's going to be really easy for him to fall off and quickly kind of remove himself from the conversation. I personally hope that he stays in it because he's just an exciting player to watch, and I really enjoy watching him play. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
I think it's funny, though, we didn't bring it up yet, but Mike Vick tweeted that Lamar Jackson was like, well, I don't know how many times it was, but he said it was
five times better
than Vick ever was at Virginia Tech, which is really funny. And then he got an argument with his brother Marcus about it, which is even funnier. but I just think it's interesting that, you know, this guy's really getting some attention, and that could also hurt him because, you know, going from, like, not being known to being, like, what everybody's talking about in 3 weeks, definitely, you know, play some mind games with you, and he does not have an easy schedule at all.
All right. So, looks like we'll have to wait and see on if he can continue his success, but exciting time so far for Lamar Jackson. Let's transition to someone who has kind of been very hyped for a while, and that's Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson. Clemson had a similar result to their game last weekend with a 59-0 win over South Carolina State. Obviously, the competition is not exactly comparable, but Clemson didn't look great to start the season, and this game kind of made them look a lot better than they have been. So if anyone wants to kind of talk about Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I mean, Clemson was, you know, coming into the season, a lot of hype around Clemson. Deshaun Watson was in the front cover of Sports Illustrated for Kids, the August edition, so you know that, like, a lot of hype going around this guy. I think it was deserved, because if you look at his 2015 stats, he threw for 4,000 yards. He's already thrown for almost 700 yards this season, 7 touchdowns this season, only 3 interceptions. He is a very good quarterback on a very good team. We shouldn't forget how good Clemson's defense is, and unfortunately, I know the Heisman's like a singular thing, but you need to win games to be in the contention for the Heisman, and Clemson's going to win a lot of games, especially because they're in that ACC where they, you know, they're going to run up some points against Boston College. You know, I mean, now that we've seen that FSU could potentially be trash this year, they're going to score against them. So it'll be very interesting to see how that goes.
I think that this South Carolina State game was really interesting. I mean, you know, what they play in the second half, 2 12-minute quarters,
yeah,
because they're winning by so much.
Mercy rule.
But we also can't forget that Watson's first two games weren't really the best. I mean, this Clemson team only beat Troy by 6 points in their second game, and they beat Auburn by 6. You know, Watson didn't look great in those games. But we'll see as they head into the second part of their schedule if the South Carolina State game could kind of get him going a little bit better than he had been before this game.
I think the worst thing for Deshaun Watson is the fact that he plays in the ACC. If you look at the 4 teams ahead of them in the college football rankings as of right now, it's Alabama, Ohio State, Louisville, and Michigan. I mean, Louisville doesn't have a great conference either, but Michigan, Ohio State, and Alabama definitely... if they win out, there's no doubt that they'll be in the... Well, I guess Ohio State and Michigan can't win out because they will play each other.
They
but,
will, yeah.
There's a good chance those teams are probably going to do very well because you know Alabama won't lose. Well, don't know it because we're famous for making predictions that end up being incorrect here. But
yeah, it's...
There's potential for Clemson to be over. If Clemson loses one game, you have to think that a team like Houston would overstep them, which is the biggest... That pressure is riding on Deshaun Watson much more than trying to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I mean, now they have kind of a cupcake game against Georgia Tech next week, and then they play Louisville October 1st, primetime. That's really good. I mean, that'll be a great game.
Yeah.
First off, to watch Lamar Jackson go off against Deshaun Watson is going to be unreal, especially if you're a fan of offense. But, no, I mean, they don't have Clemson doesn't have a horrible schedule, which will both help them and hurt them because, you know... If they could win out, let's say it goes their favor in Louisville, then that'll be their most impressive win. Whereas, like we said earlier, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State are going to have much more impressive wins by the end of the season. But again, this is a Heisman talk, and if Deshaun Watson can keep on throwing like we know he can, like he did against Notre Dame last year, like he can in general, he'll be looking good.
Yeah, I mean, so we haven't seen a lot of him this season. But I think it's a little bit different than someone like Lamar Jackson because we know how good he's been in the past, and that is very, very good. So another player that will definitely be exciting to watch. Let's shift coasts and head out west and talk about Christian McCaffrey, running back for Stanford. He's the only non-QB we have on our list of Heisman hopefuls. Stanford had a nice 27-10 win over USC this weekend. McCaffrey ran for 165 yards and a touchdown. Also caught 4 passes for 73 yards and a touchdown, so a pretty solid game from him. You guys think because he's a running back and not a quarterback in a season when we have so many exciting quarterbacks that his chances are kind of small by comparison?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that he has against them is more that he plays for Stanford on the West Coast, and I think that that kind of comes into play a lot in these kinds of situations, because they play so late at night, and you know, they don't get the same kind of primetime viewership on the East Coast that that other teams do. But in terms of being a running back, I mean, I think he fills the stat sheet. I mean, like the stats you said, he gets out of the backfield, he catches passes, he's an absolute beast on the ground, he's quick, he's powerful, he's going to put up big numbers, and I guess the question will just be if those numbers are big enough to be impressive against those great quarterbacks that we talked about.
I mean, it didn't hurt him last year. So last year he came second in the rankings, second in the voting for the Heisman, and he lost to Derrick Henry, a running back out of Alabama. So I definitely think quarterback bias can exist, but it's not always the case. Unfortunately, for him, he's not just going up against, you know, quarterbacks in the sense of, you know, being able to throw the ball really well. He's going up against quarterbacks who can also run, you know, use Lamar Jackson's running. Deshaun Watson also is a threat like that. And so I think the biggest thing for him will be how can he not only contribute to making Stanford win, but like how can he show off? They don't have a really that hard of a schedule. Pac-12 isn't that good this year. Obviously, Washington is another top 10 team in the Pac-12, but that's really it. And so he's going to need to do more than, you know, running for 160 yards against USC if he wants to be in the conversation. Not that that isn't a good game, and not that it isn't like obviously useful for winning because they won, but he's going to have to do a lot more than status quo to be a big running back to win the Heisman, because that doesn't happen that often anymore.
I think anybody that watched the Rose Bowl game last year will know who Christian McCaffrey is and pay attention to him. Like Dunn said, 160 yards on the ground, probably not going to get it done when Lamar Jackson is putting up 6-7 touchdowns a game. But at the same time, Christian McCaffrey is averaging like 5.6 yards per carry. Like, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's only two games, but the fact that that's like, oh, that's good enough for third in the current Heisman picture is like crazy. I think it just speaks to how potent these offenses in the NCAA are now. And I think just playing at Stanford, where they don't run the spread offense and things, they're not running shotgun every play, is something that is like, I don't want to say behind the times, but it doesn't lead itself as easily to winning the Heisman as a spread offense does.
I'd agree. I think like flair definitely comes in a lot, because mm-hmm. I think as much as the Heisman is, you know, rewarding players for how good they are, it's also kind of the hype around them, media-wise, fan-wise, and I think it's tough for a player like Christian McCaffrey to have the same kind of excitement, like you guys said.
Do you think the Heisman could go to a player on a team that doesn't make the playoff? Like, if Stanford came in fifth and McCaffrey was, like, clearly the best player in the nation, do you think they would still give him the Heisman over somebody like Lamar Jackson if Louisville was in it?
I guess that's like a weird hypothetical. It could happen. I don't really know that there's like some kind of conspiracy to only make it V teams in the playoffs. But I also understand where you're coming from, though. It's definitely, you need to be on a good team to win the Heisman, right? So like, you can't just be a good player surrounded by, you know, a bunch of goofballs and you won't win the Heisman. And unfortunately, I guess that's both fortunate and unfortunate. But Stanford's not a bad team. They're seventh ranked. They'll have some impressive wins. And so we know that, you know, at least Houston's playing Louisville. They also play Clemson. Like, there are going to be teams ahead of them that are losing. So it's not out of the question to see Stanford in the playoff either.
All right. Let's transition to our fourth and final Heisman hopeful that we're going to talk about. And that is Ohio State QB JT Barrett. A lot of people were skeptical of Ohio State coming into this season. They lost 16 seniors from last year's team. But so far, they've looked really good. They beat Oklahoma 45-24. JT Barrett threw for 4 touchdowns on only 20 pass attempts. And I think another very exciting player to watch. Does he have an advantage in some ways or a disadvantage in some ways over the other kind of QBs, Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, or is it kind of just whoever's able to put up the biggest numbers is going to be the favorite amongst those three?
I think it's going to be both biggest numbers and most fun to watch plays. Because we talked about it earlier, like, and this could be a critique of all college football. It's also part of the reason why I loved it. It's really, like, nowadays especially, it's really fast, and it's really about, like, who looks the coolest while they're doing things they do. And so, I don't think he's at a, I wouldn't say he's at a disadvantage, because he's a beast, and he's 6'1", 222. Like, he is... he is more than capable of making football plays. Well, just really, it's kind of a, I think it's kind of a rat race between the three quarterbacks. And it'll be really fun to watch how it all goes down.
I think this is just the feeling I get every year. As not like a super intense college football fan, like I'm a fan of college football, I'll watch it whenever it's on. I feel like I never see Ohio State. Like, I feel like I just never see them on TV. They play like the one nighttime game against Michigan, and then like they play like these noon games, these 3 o'clock games. I'm never watching at that time, so like, I mean, I'm sure much of America is, but I just haven't seen them. Like every year I feel like they're incredible, and I don't see them until their Michigan game, and then I see them in the bowl game dominating whoever they play.
I mean, I watched them on primetime on Saturday against Oklahoma, and I will say that JT Barrett looked very, very impressive on national television. But he's gonna have a lot of good games too. But just based on the fact that the Big Ten East is very, very good this year, and the Big Ten East is, you know, he's gonna be playing Michigan, so he's gonna have some very good games, and there's gonna be, I think, more than enough chances to watch him shine. He'll have the chance. If he doesn't play up to his, you know, potential, then that's on him. But he will be on some big time games.
Emphasis on the casual.
I think it's interesting. We just talked about four players, no SEC players, for all the Alabama hype. We've got two ACC, a Pac-12, Big Ten East. I'm in favor of that. I'll be honest. I like it when there's more attention outside the SEC. I feel like it kind of is an overhyped conference for as good as they are. So I'm excited to watch all these guys. They're all really fun to watch. They're all young players who hopefully will have bright futures. Speaking of young players who will hopefully about segues. Let's go to our next topic, which is to discuss the week that U.S. men's national team soccer player Christian Pulisic has had. Call him Pulisic. I actually don't know which one's correct. It's pretty unclear because everyone uses different ones. But so he is now with his club team, Borussia Dortmund, in the Bundesliga in Germany. Last week they played Legia Warsaw in the Champions League, and Christian Pulisic got the start, got an assist, could have had a goal too. There's just him and another player on Dortmund, Mark Bartra, kind of both could have had a tap in into the open net, and Bartra was just closer to the ball. He got the start again over the weekend in the Bundesliga when Dortmund played Darmstadt, and got a goal and two assists. A lot of people had him as man of the match for that game. So very exciting times for Christian Pulisic. Any thoughts on kind of how he's been playing lately and what that means for him personally and for the U.S. soccer world as a whole?
I mean, I think that this is a really, really big deal. And, you know, we haven't heard a lot about Pulisic until the past year or so. I mean, granted, he was 17, so that's probably why. But, you know, for American soccer, it isn't every day that any player is tearing it up in Europe, and it especially is less likely for an 18-year-old American to be doing that. We've seen him do things for Dortmund. We've seen him do things for the first-level American team. He's pretty much just almost dominating every game he comes into, and he brings this style of play that I don't think the U.S. soccer men's national team has had in a really, really long time. He can take players on. He can cross the ball into the box. He looks like the number 10 that the Americans have been lacking over the past few years. And, you know, whether or not he can actually end up fulfilling that role, I think is still yet to be seen. But these last few days have been incredible, and it has definitely brought a lot of hope and promise to a lot of U.S. soccer fans.
I mean, first I'd like to point out that Mr. Pulisic is from the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And there are three Pennsylvanians at this table, and so I think we can all acknowledge that there's a reason he's that good, and that's because he is from the Keystone State. However, also, I would like to say that I think there's kind of this mentality that, you know, and well, we might talk about it a little later, but there is kind of like this savior mentality that U.S. soccer always has, where like so-and-so player is going to be the next guy to come in, and he's going to be like Pele or like Messi, and like he alone is going to make soccer great in the United States. And I mean, it's kind of failed a couple times, and I mean, it hasn't worked entirely, but there have been, you know, hype around good players before. But I think Pulisic is like very different from that, in that he wasn't as hyped up until, this is going to sound stupid, but he wasn't really that hyped up until we'd already seen that he was good. And unlike someone like Michael Bradley, who got his first cap at 16 for the United States, I also hate Michael Bradley. I will never forgive him for turning the ball over against Portugal. But yeah, unlike a lot of other players, I think Pulisic has already, to an extent, proved himself more than a lot of the guys on the national team. Like, a lot of the guys on the national team probably couldn't score in a Bundesliga game like that. And so I was very, very impressed by what I saw this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, Nick, he was 17 when he played both of these games. He just turned 18 on Sunday. He is very young, very talented. I think people, as much as people have been comparing him to American greats like Landon Donovan, they've also been comparing him to the infamous Freddie Adu, who I would say, I don't know that we've had a player hyped like Christian Pulisic since Freddie Adu. And I think there's a worry in a lot of U.S. soccer fans' minds that this could be not exactly the same because of how much success Pulisic has already had at a very high level, but a similar situation where his ultimate, you know, end game where he ends up as a player isn't kind of what people expect because people expect so much from him.
Yeah, I think it's just the burden of expectation. Like Chris had said earlier, people expect him to be like Pele or like Messi or something like that. I don't think there's going to be an American soccer player that has that same kind of effect on both the culture and like the national team. America just is not a soccer nation. I don't, like, Christian Pulisic being as good as he is, like, I don't see how that helps the United States team as that much. Like, he's going to help them a little bit, but he still has Michael Bradley behind him. He still has, like, I mean, Jermaine Jones. These are not bad players, but this isn't, like, Pepe. This isn't, like, Portugal or Brazil or Germany or anything like that. But in terms of the Freddie Adu comparison, I think it's a little unfair. Freddie Adu was, like, 14, I think, when he got drafted. Christian Pulisic is 18. Weird calling him by his last name when he's younger than I am, and he's like we said, he's proven that he can do well. I think this last four games or so, he's had what, a goal and two assists. You mentioned the stats earlier.
Yeah, this past week in the two games, he had a total of one goal and three assists.
Yeah, so I mean, like, between that and his play in the for the U.S. national team, I think the fact that he's proven what he can do is, I don't think that Adu comparisons are warranted. I think there's reason to be cautionary about how much pressure you put on him, but I don't think you need to say, he could end up like Freddie Adu, because I think his floor is, like, higher than Freddie Adu's ceiling was, based on what we saw from Freddie Adu.
Yeah, I think that's true, because, I mean, Adu, we're talking about a kid that got drafted at age 14 and was given the highest contract on his team at that age, which is, I mean, kind of unbelievable. And then Adu was kind of anointed not just the savior of the U.S. team, but he was also, like, kind of expected to bring MLS. Because MLS, I mean, it's definitely improved since then, but it was really kind of unpopular back then. And he was expected to go to DC United and kind of pick the whole league up and make it, you know, a lot more popular. Whereas Pulisic, you know, he started on Dortmund's B team, and he worked his way up. And, I mean, now he's just being on their Champions League roster is, I mean, it's really a testament to Dortmund truly believing that he can contribute right now, and he's not just a player for the future. Because, I mean, if you're thinking, oh, he's going to be good in a few years, there's no reason to put him on your 25-man roster, because that's just this year. So obviously they have high expectations for him, not just for the future, but right now. And you know, hopefully he can live up to those and continue to get minutes for Dortmund because he's playing really well right now.
The other thing you have to think about when you're talking about with Adu is, I mean, Nick kind of talked about it in the state of the MLS, but also is the state of U.S. soccer. And I would argue that, like, the entire U.S. soccer infrastructure has moved pretty like, well past where they did where they were when Adu came over. And, I mean, love or hate Jurgen Klinsmann, but I think they have a legitimate system going on over there that, one, Pulisic could very well and has shown to be, like, a very good part of that system. But two, I would argue that, you know, there's other young stars around him too, Bobby Wood, that kind of thing, where he is going to be, like, he's put in a position where he can succeed, whereas I don't think Adu was ever put in that position. He was brought over here as a 14-year-old, and we just kind of assumed he was going to be sick, with really, like, a pretty shitty organization around him. Whereas here, like, Pulisic is kind of being placed in a position where success is not out of the question.
I mean, so right now, he's gone playing dive for Dortmund. He started the past two games. I don't know that that's a guarantee for him. Marco Reus for Dortmund is still injured. They have an incredible number of really, really talented attacking players. So, obviously, it's great if Pulisic can keep up with that team and continue to get minutes. If he doesn't, do you think he should... Do you think it's important for him to stay at that highest level, even if he's not playing? Or there were rumors of him going somewhere, making a move to, like, the Premier League, where he might get more minutes on, like, a mid-table Premier League team or something like that. So I guess the question is kind of, is it important to be on a high level or for him to play as much as possible?
I mean, I think he needs to get on the pitch. And if he ends up, you know, on the bench for Dortmund when Reus comes back or... their players recover from the injuries. I mean, I think it's good to train against players like that every day, but I also think he needs to play in real games. And I think that, you know, if some of Dortmund's injured players come back, I wouldn't be surprised because, I mean, there were offers for him, what, like 18 million pounds from Liverpool,
I think? Not quite that much, but like over 10 at least.
Yeah, so I don't know if Dortmund would sell him. But if these players come back and can prove and take this playing time away from him again, I think that we could definitely see him go out on loan somewhere for the rest of the season during the January window.
I'm always a fan of young athletes playing as much as possible. I know that's not how the Europeans do it. Like, here, like, I'm just talking basketball now, but, like, here, the AAU circuit, like, the kids play, like, three games in a day, two times in a week, and then they go for a week. In Europe, they practice, which is why their players are so much more skilled when they get drafted over here. And it's probably the same way with soccer. I think playing so much when you're young is not a very good thing, but now that he's experienced soccer at its highest level, I think transitioning to a team like, I don't know, Middlesbrough, Southampton, somewhere where he would be able to play a lot, I think that aids development the most once you've already shown that you have signs of, like, promise. You can train as much as you want with the highest level people, but nothing compares to being out on the pitch for, like, a real game, playing against teams like Man City or things like that. Those aren't the experiences he's going to get if he's sitting on the bench at Dortmund. He's only going to get that if he gets a move. So if he does sit when Reus comes back or things end up happening at Dortmund where he's not getting the playing time that he's getting now, I think a move to the Premier League would probably be best for him, but, I mean, everybody has their own philosophy.
Yeah. So I think either way, I think we're all very hopeful. It's obviously we don't want to buy into that too much and expect him to be the savior of U.S. soccer, but he's a very talented player and one that we don't see every day, every year even, every decade even. He's a really special player, and so we're all, I think, hoping that whatever he ends up doing, he achieves the high level of success that he's shown that he's capable of already. So with that, we want to kind of point something out that's kind of happened in the time since our last episode. So as I'm sure you remember, we had a few theories that we came up with in the last episode, and those theories, we feel like we may have affected the sports world with our theories. So if anyone wants to kind of, Chris Dunn, you were here last week. Do you want to tackle this, our theories and what's happened to them since?
Okay, so last week, I'm not going to say who said it, but it was me, said that Jimmy Garoppolo was going to go 4-0 with the Patriots, thus causing Tom Brady to get traded.
To the Browns.
To the Browns, yes, to the Browns, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we really hyped up Jimmy Garoppolo. We said he was handsome about 15 times and was a great quarterback. And his shoulder is now very screwed up. And so, Jimmy, I would like to apologize on behalf of the sports sermon if our conversation had anything to do with you getting hurt. That is not what we wanted at all.
All right. So our second conspiracy was related to Landon Donovan. I think we had a few theories. My favorite was that EA had orchestrated his return to MLS with the Galaxy to get him back on FIFA for FIFA 17 so people could just pay lots of money to get his card in Ultimate Team. Well, Landon Donovan has actually done pretty well since getting back. He scored a goal in their game against Sporting Kansas City to tie the game 2-2. He's, you know, hasn't played in a long time, already looking fairly up to speed. So Landon Donovan, we would just like to apologize for criticizing you. EA, you probably didn't have a hand in bringing him back.
All right, let's not say probably. You may not have had a hand.
We're gonna cool down our take a little bit and say that you may not have definitely done that like we were sure of last week. I guess the point I want to bring up and something I want to ask all of you guys is, when we're sitting here right now with this microphone, do we have the power to jinx athletes? If we hype up Jimmy Garoppolo, is he going to get hurt? If we criticize Landon Donovan, is he going to do well?
If we do have that power, I would like to say right now that Kirk Cousins is awful. He will throw 0 touchdowns and 4 interceptions next week, and the Redskins will lose. And if that has any effect on the sports world, let it be known that I said it here first.
Well, I will say that last week's episode, you may have heard Johnny was all in on Jameis Winston. He said he was ready to go for Jameis Winston. I said, let's give it a few days. Jameis Winston's stat line against the Cardinals yesterday, 51.9% completion percentage, 1 touchdown, 4 interceptions, 39.2 QB rating. Fucking awful. You can thank Johnny for that one. And I would just like to say that, yeah, we do have the effect. And the Eagles are going to lose every game for the rest of the year. And there's not a goddamn thing Jameis can do about it.
Well, we will certainly follow this storyline as the weeks continue and we make more episodes to truly determine the extent of our psychic powers on the sports world. But that brings us to the end of this episode of the Sports Sermon. You can follow the Georgetown Voice on Twitter at GTown Voice. You can find this podcast on www.georgetownvoice.com, or you can subscribe to our iTunes channel, The Voice Podcast Network on iTunes. You can also follow us all individually on Twitter. I am at John, J-O-N, underscore, block, underscore.
I'm at G-E-T, underscore, I-R, underscore, D-U-N-N.
Dear God.
What the hell is that?
Get her done, baby.
I'm just at Nick Gavio. Kind of boring, but
professional. I respect that.
At Tyler underscore Perry, P-E-A-R-R-E. Don't get it twisted.
We all got it twisted and called him Tyler Pierre for the first several months of us knowing him.
Sorry, I spelled your name with an H the other day, so it's all good.
All right. Our music for this podcast comes from www.bensound.com. They have lots of great royalty-free music, so check that out if for whatever reason you need royalty-free music. That's all. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Later.
See you.